This week, we are rerunning the opera series with Desiree Mays that aired here on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe in the spring. The opera about which we are speaking this morning corresponds to the one being performed tonight at the Santa Fe Opera, which is on the web at santafeopera.org. They can also be reached by phone at 505-986-5900. And we're talking today to Desiree Mays, international opera lecturer and storyteller, and author of the new book, Opera Unveiled, now in its 15th year. She speaks every night at the Preview Buffet at the Opera. Welcome, Desiree, to the Radio Cafe.
Hello, Mary Charlotte. It's good to be here.
And we're talking today about the opera Oscar, which is a great highlight of this season at the Santa Fe Opera. It is, of course, about Oscar Wilde, who is the author of one of my favorite mottos, namely, I can resist anything except temptation.
Yes. He was very well known for these wonderful aphorisms. Oscar Wilde was an Irishman, first and foremost.
Tell us his whole name.
You want his whole name? Okay.
With your beautiful Irish accent.
His whole name was Oscar Fingal O'Flaherty Wills Wilde was Irish. He's not an Englishman. Some people here do seem to be under that misconception. They also think George Bernard Shaw was English. They both had their careers in London, of course, in England. But they are both Irish, I'm very proud to announce. He was born in Dublin in 1854, first went to Trinity College and then to Oxford. So this amazing, amazing human being who really reached the heights in terms of a literary career. He was a magnificent playwright. He wrote a book, the famous Life of Dorian Gray. Picture of Dorian Gray. He wrote children's stories. That's how I first came to Oscar Wilde as a child in Ireland. These were the wonderful children's stories we listened to, The Little Prince, The Fisherman's Soul, The Selfish Giant. And they are stories one should still go back to and read, preferably before you see the opera. The opera doesn't deal with the glory of Oscar Wilde, which is one of the interesting questions. How do you take a life like Oscar Wilde's and where do you pick it up? So the early part of his life was very successful. He was in Oxford. He was very outgoing, very gregarious. He fell in love with a couple of appropriate young women but didn't marry them. But he was fascinated with the whole decadent movement. He was in love with the beauty for its own sake, art for its own sake. And he was showing leanings of being gay, homosexual, even in college. But in spite of this, in 1884, I think it was, he got married to Constance, who was the daughter of a barrister. And it was a very happy marriage for about 6-7 years. They had two sons whom he adored. He loved these two boys, Vivian and Cyril. But then he met Lord Alfred Douglas, who we all know as Bosie, who is the son of the Marquess of Queensbury. Bosie was at Oxford. He was a very beautiful boy, and Oscar offered to coach him in poetry. And they fell in love, and they had this amazing love-hate relationship. And it was Bosie who introduced Oscar to the world of London's underworld of male prostitution, which was, of course, the beginning of the downfall. But in the meantime, he had the most amazing career. He came to America. He was here for a year in 1882, and he did a lecture tour in outrageous clothes. I mean, he was very flamboyant, but everyone seemed to love him. A great example is when he went to Leadville, up the road here.
Leadville, Colorado,
to the mining town, to
the
Tabor Opera House, which is still there. And he went and he gave a talk, and you wondered, you know, how would he get on with these miners? They were mining for silver. So he talked to them about another silversmith, Benvenuto Cellini. And the miners were saying, why didn't you bring him with you? he was a hit.
He was a Renaissance guy.
Renaissance sculptor, of course, in silver. Beautiful work. So at the end of the talk, they invited him to dinner, and they brought him down the mine. They were opening a special shaft to be called the Oscar. So he goes down in this bucket, which must have been very hard given the velvet clothes that he wore. And he got to the bottom. He said, we had a marvelous dinner. The first course was whiskey, the second was whiskey, and the third course was whiskey. So you can see how much how much of a hit he was. He was very outgoing. He was very generous. He came from a wonderful family. His father had been an eye and ear, a doctor, very famous. And his mother, who had fought for the Irish nationalist cause, she was quite a character. These were two highly respected people in Ireland. And when the father died, the mother moved to London. They had these salons, and they were the parties where everybody wanted to be seen, and Oscar would always be the center of attention. He fell in love with theater, and for instance, when Sarah Bernhardt arrived on English shores, he was there to greet her at the gangplank and threw lilies at her feet. And then the terribly sad irony that years later, Sarah Bernhardt would play Salome, his play, and the first night was in Paris when he was in prison in Reading Jail. So the tragedy. So there was all this magnificent career that Oscar Wilde had before we even get to the opera. And when we come to the opera is by Theodore Morrison, who is a wonderful man from back east. He's known for, originally he was involved with organ work and chorale work. He's written a wonderful choral symphony, Art and Resurrection, and a number of songs based on beautiful poetry of Walt Whitman, Joyce, people like that. But when I came to write my chapter for Opera Unveiled, you know, this is a world premiere. There's a lot of buzz everywhere about this opera, and opera and Oscar Wilde, isn't that a sort of a edgy subject to be taking on? It is.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're just on the verge of legalizing gay marriage. That's everywhere, right. So it's a beautiful year to be doing that.
It is. I can't imagine that when they started working on this a few years ago, they would have any idea, actually, that this whole question of gay marriage and human rights, equal rights in terms of the whole gay movement would be coming to a head. But you'll hear about that. So today I'm really happy to be able to play some of the interviews with the creation team, starting with Theodore Morrison, who is the composer. And when he was asked about how did this whole thing come to life in the first place, I think he describes it very well. So maybe we could hear that in his own words.
I had gone to London to hear David Daniels sing the British premiere of my song cycle on poems by James Joyce. And it was a fantastic performance. Martin Katz played the piano, and he's one of the greatest. And then I went backstage afterwards to greet David, and a tall gentleman came in and introduced himself as John Cox. I didn't know John, but he said he was an opera director, and I should have known that, but I didn't, not being that associated with the opera world at that time. And then John said, "Have you ever written an opera?" He told me he had really loved the song cycle, and I said, "No, but I would certainly like to write one for David." And he said, "Well, here's my card. If you're interested in discussing this more, please be in touch." So after I determined that this is something I really wanted to do, I called David, who was living in Washington at the time, and said, "David, John Cox and I have been talking about maybe writing an opera for you. Would you be interested?" And he said, "Well, let's talk." So I flew down to Washington. David and I had a chat, and we tried to figure out what would be a good subject for an opera for him. He's a countertenor, and he sings in the mezzo-soprano range. It so happens that Max Beerbohm, one of Oscar's famous friends, said that Oscar had a mezzo voice, a very expressive mezzo voice. And I thought, oh my golly, that's just the right thing for David. And the subject is something that David was very excited about. Well, Walt Whitman begins the opera and introduces Oscar Wilde and the story. He's something like a Shakespearean chorus. At the end of the prologue, Oscar says, "What lies before you is my past." He's infamous by then from having been accused of gross indecency, which simply meant homosexual love at that time. And then the scene jumps to the London streets, where Oscar is an ostracized man from society, looking for rooms in hotels, can't find a hotel that will take him. And he winds up in the home of Ada Leverson, who was one of the great literary figures of the time. And so she invites Oscar to wait out his time for the trial in her nursery apartment, because her child, Violet, was in the country with her husband. We also have taken Lord Alfred Douglas, who's called Bosie, who was Oscar Wilde's great love, and we brought him into the story as a dancer, so that he never speaks. He's always a figment of Oscar's imagination, and he dances in very different costumes for different purposes, but underneath these costumes is Bosie Douglas. And Oscar Wilde said, if you give a man a mask, he will tell you the truth. So there will be a series of masks that work along with this. And near the end of the act, Ada is waiting for news of the results of the trial. Frank Harris arrives, and he's in a furious diatribe. He tells what had happened in the trial. The conviction, the hanging judge who gave the maximum sentence, and so forth. What we do on the stage is have the nursery explode into the Old Bailey during Frank's diatribe. And there is a black farce in which the judge arrives costumed as a clown. The jury arrive one by one, scampering on the stage as costumed as puppets, toys, dolls, and so forth, the sort of thing one would find in a nursery. And then Oscar Wilde is brought in a solemn procession, and he seems to be the only sane person in the room. Oscar Wilde is a great man. We present him not as a victim, we present him as a hero. Oscar is my very first opera. Hope it's not my last. What I have learned about making an opera is not only what I've learned from David and John, it's also what I've learned from the Santa Fe Opera and from the marvelous administration here and how devoted they are to getting the highest artistic product they can. And so they have spared no means to make this an important event, and I feel humbled, honored, and thrilled that this is happening.
And we've just been listening to Theodore Morrison, the composer of the opera Oscar, which premieres this year. The world premiere is this summer at the Santa Fe Opera.
Yes, it is, the 27th of July, yes.
And it's interesting because, I mean, we've talked so many times over the years about specific operas, the lead role is written for a certain singer, and that's what this is.
Yes, the question will come up, has come up, you know, why is Oscar Wilde sung by a countertenor? It's still a voice that people are getting used to, I think, and I can talk a little bit about what that voice is. And I'm going to actually play you David Daniels singing so we can experience it firsthand. I think the reasoning is very interesting. The main reason that this opera is sung by a countertenor is that David Daniels, one of the world's greatest countertenors, has been singing a lot of Baroque repertoire, which is typically what a countertenor sings, and wanted an opera that would make a social statement. And when this came up, he said, yes, this is exactly what I want to do. So given that, and given the fact that he had actually been a student of Theodore Morrison's way back, when he was a baritone, but he wasn't having much success as a regular singer, and he used to go and party at night and sing all the soprano roles at parties until finally his coach said, "Well, why don't you take this seriously?" And he did, and the rest is history. This man has the most extraordinarily beautiful sound, but he's a countertenor. So, what is a countertenor? It's hard to get a definitive answer to that question because many people will say this is a falsettist, someone who is singing beyond, higher than the full voice. The full voice in a very high tenor voice is what we call a Helden tenor, you find in a lot of Wagner operas. But they're singing full voice in the male voice. This has gone that step higher, and it sounds like an alto, a mezzo-soprano, even a soprano voice. There is, it's an incredibly beautiful sound. It was around a lot at the time of the Baroque, at the time of Handel, and then sort of dropped out of the repertoire. And it wasn't until Benjamin Britten brought that back in some of his operas. There's a quote here from a great vocal coach, David Jones, who says, In my experience, the countertenor is basically a singer who has developed the falsetto with such strength that it has similar power and resonance to a full voice sound. Often these singers possess a lower male voice, a baritone or bass is their natural voice, which is amazing. You'd expect it to be a tenor. It's not necessarily a tenor. And that is actually is greater because this singer often possesses the ability to hold back tremendous amounts of breath pressure with the body, which allows the falsetto to develop great strength and beauty of tone along with an extraordinary agility. And this agility makes it possible to sing these florid phrases demanded in the repertoire for the countertenor.
Do any of the countertenors train in both ranges? It would be so interesting to hear a countertenor then boom into his baritone and then go back again.
According to this teacher, no, because one does not complement the other. If the countertenor has to come down at the lower end of the countertenor range, it has to be that switch into the full voice, and that has to be very carefully done. And it's not something, you know, once you make the decision to make the switch. They say, the coaches, that it's both it's a physical and a psychological switch. It's a major switch to do this. And David Daniels has been at the forefront, certainly in America, of this trend, which is now becoming very popular. So I was fortunate. Actually, the Santa Fe Opera has up on its website some of these interviews with the production team, but I excerpted a little bit for your show, Mary Charlotte. So I thought it'd be nice to hear from David Daniels himself as to why he is taking on this role.
Excellent. Let's hear.
When Theo came to me to ask, you know, subject matter, my comment to him was not so much about a historical figure, but something that had an edge to it, something that had an emotion that was contemporary, that was now, something that could make a difference now and could be understood now in 2013. And certainly I feel like Oscar Wilde is perfect for that. And it was Theo and John Cox who actually said Oscar Wilde at the same time, I believe. So I would love to take credit for it, but I loved the idea, but it was not my idea. Just the fear of what he was put through certainly resonates hugely today. And that is where I got the most excited about this story. It's important that I don't play Oscar Wilde as an impersonator trying to be Oscar Wilde with the cigarette and with mannerisms and, you know, Stephen Fry coming to the opera stage. I think that's really important that it be told as a human story and as an emotional story and not about trying to be Rich Little doing an impersonation, trying to get the language or the accent perfect. Because then it becomes about that and it doesn't become about the emotional content. Personal things in my life happen where I've seen this kind of persecution happen and it still happens a lot. And I'm hoping that this touches people. As any artistic anything, it makes people think, and it makes people leave the theater changed.
And that was David Daniels talking about playing the role of Oscar Wilde. This is really a groundbreaking moment, isn't it?
It really is, and it's really exciting to be able to hear from the singer for whom the role has been written.
Yeah.
I mean, that's very rare, and he's a very responsible artist, I think, as you can hear in this. He's thought this through carefully. It'll be fascinating to see how he shapes this role in rehearsal. Well, I thought having heard that sort of deep voice, his speaking voice, it might be interesting to hear him sing, remembering that that. At this point, we don't have music for the opera because until July 27th, we won't know how
that's
it sounds.
That's right. And we're recording before that.
That's so. Right. Yeah. And it's always a challenge for me to write this chapter, sight unseen. So I feel really blessed to be able to talk to the composer, directors, and the singer. So the piece I do have for you to listen to from David Daniels, the countertenor, is a piece that was actually written for him by Theodore Morrison. It's based on, it's called Chamber Music, a song cycle based on James Joyce songs. So listen to this. Listen to the beauty of the tone. It is a slightly different sound, but it's one that you should probably hear a lot of before you go to the opera to be familiar with it. But this is David Daniels singing Theodore Morrison.
And that is David Daniels singing in his beautiful countertenor voice a piece of music by Theodore Morrison, who wrote the opera Oscar.
And who wrote the song cycle for David as well. So
right.
They go back, you know, and it's lovely to see that collaboration. The third partner, really the leading partner in this too, is John Cox, who's a very well-known London opera director and theatre director.
And he did the libretto.
He wrote the libretto for this, very proudly. And I talked with him also. Email is incredible. I can email these people all around the world. And they are so generous, Mary Charlotte, both the composer and the librettist, in getting back to me and talking about this. He said that they had gone to great lengths, the production team, to actually use the quotes of Wilde himself, to quote from letters. And there's two sections in the opera that are direct quotes from De Profundis, which is the great essay he wrote when he was in prison, and the Ballad of Reading Jail, the last thing he wrote, which is about prison conditions in Victorian prison system, which were horrendous. So those are directly in the libretto, and they said the connective tissue is ours. That's what John Cox said. So in order to link the sections together, they may not be in exact chronological order, but they really are the words of Wilde.